Thank you very much. It was
Adios.
wonderful introduction. It's an honor to be here today. Thank you very much for the invitation, providing me with the opportunity to talk today how Gaia might help in understanding the role of dark matter. I listed here my collaborators in this project. Many of them are my colleagues, was my tutor, what was my tutor, and now they are also inside my students. So it's quite mixed age group. Now, my talk today, I will try to show you, to explain some background, why we use generativity now for astrometry. And today we are in the domain of relativistic or gravitational astrometry, and how we can challenge the galactic models with the Milky Way stars, specifically using our Milky Way as a LMCDM laboratory, so the closest cosmological product at zero redshift. And I will present you a test on generativity and Milky Way scale, and in particular, how we can interpret dark matter with the generativity in this such a scenario. Let me say two options. I mean, gravity, everyone knows gravity is not just a force, it's a become itself, and this is reality when we look at the evolution of the stars. And also gravity rules our universe, so and in particular is create a distribution of distances and velocities in the near and far universe. And both these are characteristic, peculiar characteristic of the Gaia satellite. Gaia was launched in 2013 and mapped from the L2 of the Earth. Can I see? No. Yeah, please. From the L2 solar Lagrangian point of the solar Earth system. It mapped all the sky, as you can see here, because it was endowed with the spin rotation microperception at fixed angle to the sun in order to guarantee escape gas coverage. And it mapped almost 2 billion objects with an accuracy of 1 microsecond. What is microsecond? It's a huge accuracy. It's like to see the tip of the mole. The mole is the characteristic building in Turin, which is a star with a star, and to see the size of this star from Jupiter. So it's a very huge angles. As a matter of fact, astrometry is a very old branch of astronomy, dedicated to always to the fundamental question, what is our place in the universe? And basically, it collects photons, it measures angles, collects photons received over time from all sorts of celestial sources at the observers. And from measuring angle, it's able to understand the position, the movement of the stars. So the accuracy was increased through the ages. The first astrometric mission in space was Hipparcos, launched in 1989, and the Gaia was the second space mission. And basically, for Hipparcos, the accuracy was 1 millisecond. The location on object in astronomy is considered variable if the relative error is less than 10%. So if we have, for example, relative error of 1 millisecond, we get 10^-3 arc second. With Gaia, we have the accuracy, nominal accuracy of 10 microseconds. That means that we are able to reach the galactic scale here. So this is the size of the Hipparcos mission. With Gaia, we enlarged our investigation, the Milky Way, up to the galactic scale, 10 kiloparsecs. Basically, we make the standard parallax measurement, but of course with the smaller angles, smaller and smaller angles. Gaia, so one of the main features of Gaia is that collecting this focal has collected in its focal plane three fundamental measures in astrometry for the position, proportion, and parallaxes, photometry for the spectral classification, for brightness, temperature, mass, age, and spectrometry for radial velocity, chemical abundance, and so on. So the main goal is to map almost 2 billion objects, but also to classify them, to carefully classify each individual object according to their characteristics, for example, position, velocity, brightness, temperature, composition, and time. And in doing this, produce science to understand, in order, the main goal is to understand the origin, the structure, the evolution of Milky Way, but as well as also to study, to make some tests of fundamental physics, the solar system at the scale of Milky Way. Here you can see the last maps produced by Gaia. And the top of that, you see the total brightness score of star observed with the last Gaia data release. The middle is the star density map, and the one is interesting, the dust, the extinction in our Milky Way. Gaia now has been facilitated. In the last 10 years, it was nom the nominal life mission was 5 years, but we extended up to 2025. Actually, it was facilitated just because it's exhausted its propellant. And now is a collection made. Gaia made more than 3 trillion observations of 2 billion stars and other objects. Since Gaia is the actual life mission, so if you look at very carefully inside our Milky Way, but as well as also outside other galaxies, objects outside of the galaxy. For example, this slide shows you the improvement of Gaia. This is supposed to produce a stellar density map producing after 14 months of Gaia routine. It was a data Gaia, this one. And you can see here the artifact produced by essentially by the motion of Gaia, the scan of Gaia, that this was not covered the area of the sky. So this is that you can see some things of the especially the disk of the galaxy. Of course, there is some the artifact due to the fact that at that time Gaia was not accumulated many observations. For example, this is with the second Gaia data release, you can see the improvement of the Russell diagram, the evolution of the star. This is comparing what I'm observed. We observed with the focus, we were observed with after this with Gaia DR2. So we populated all the HR diagram, also with, for example, objects like white dwarf. And so this is a huge improvement with Gaia. And also, we, of course, with the last Gaia data release, so now you can see the density stellar map has been improved again, and we are able to see to spot also satellite galaxies with Gaia. This is the number of the last Gaia data release, which comprises 1 billion stars. Among the stars, 33 million, we determine also the radial velocity, the distance, the real distance of this object. Spectroscopy. Of course, this is not the end. More has to come with the next Gaia data release. DR4, for example, is expected the end of 2006. From this Gaia data release, we will have a full astrometric, photometric, radial velocity catalog, all an exoplanet list, all the classification of single, non-single stars, and so on. But most of all epoch transit, epoch astrometry, that data for all the sources. And the last one released will be Gaia DR5, which will be at the end of 2030, and will be the last archive comprise all the 5 years, 10 years observation of Gaia. And it's an important legacy archive for all the data for the decades of astronomers. So about 50, I think that most of the previous 15 years will be just Gaia, and it's a really a treasure. And okay, Gaia is looking inside of galaxies, stars, minor stars, extra planets, distant medium, solar system object. But Gaia as well is very able to detect many asteroids inside our solar system. For example, right now we have classified 106,000 asteroids. Even you are able to determine the color, the brightness, even the moon of some asteroids. But since Gaia is also by mission, now you observe those 2 billion external galaxies, and most of all, now we are 2 billion quasar, quite the very distant galaxies. But now we have 5 million quasar candidates. Okay, this is the number. I'll just show you quickly the number of Gaia data release. But as I said before, nowadays we have decided to move from classical astrometry. So as the astrometers measure always angles in the sky, but we have to move from classical astrometry to general relativity. The reason is this plot. In this plot, you can see the Gaia sky at L2. We have removed the effect of the sun here. This is the position of the planet. It's the deflected light produced by the planet of the solar system. They are, of course, they are moving, always moving, and not stationary. So this is a microsecond accuracy of Gaia. This is the main perturbation of the Gaia measurements. So we have to take into account this aspect of general relativity, even if the planet produced some deflection inside the Gaia measurement. So we have to move the angle are not anymore in straight line, between straight line, but have been geodesic, between geodesic one. Okay, so this map, stellar density map, as a matter of fact, is produced by integrating 2 million now geodesic by using general relativity. Gaia is not an imaging satellite that produces images. We reconstruct the Milky Way through measurement of the angles. Then, basically, it has been reconstructed by considering the Einstein solution for our solar systems. Which is this is the solution, the metric of our solar system, basically. And you can see here that you have this off-diagonal term, this one, which depends on the velocity of the planet of the solar system, the body inside the solar system, so-called the gravitomagnetic effect, which produces current mass. Okay, we have to keep this term because this term is the order of 1 microsecond if you consider the Virial theorem for a bound system like our solar system. So this is also the metric that is used for the definition of International Terrestrial Reference System, which is all the astronomers use this fundamental reference system. And it is used to describe the ephemerides, but also to reconstruct the light propagation. For example, here you can see in this table that we have the sun is, of course, predominant in all the solar system. Here, it's predominant. But also Jupiter, we have to take this is the threshold accuracy of 1 microsecond. So we have to take into account the sun, the Jupiter, even Saturn, and of course, other. This is for the static part, for the monopole component of the mass. Of course, if you are considering the velocity, the quadrupole part, we have to, of course, to take into account also this effect. So this is unavoidable for Gaia to consider general relativity at very core of this analysis. Another fundamental physics task of Gaia is to reconstruct in optical band the reference frame. Since so far astronomers used radio sources quasar in order to define quasi-natural reference frame in the sky. But with Gaia, we were able to connect, to link the optical reference frame with radio, but also to make a large improvements in terms of the number of sources. So we have about 5 million sources like VSO. So this is very important because we are going to consider global astrometry. So it means that we are reconstructing our sphere by considering all the angle between stars. But of course, there is always we have to fix some degeneracies due to the rotation of, for example, the satellite by considering some the reference for the quasar as the far away source, the anchor for determining the movement in the universe. But of course, the quasar for us will be zero proper motion, and for this reason, we have a good anchor to define the movement of the universe. Of course, this is since as this we introduced for the first time with Gaia general relativity, the consortium constituted for the Gaia mission agreed to set up respectively two different envelope spheral reconstruction, two different models. One is the Gram Gaia TDC model, the other Ram model TDC gastrometric model. Ram in particular is implemented in one in a data center that we have in Turing, is one of the six data centers across Europe dedicated just to the astrometric verification. I skip this slide, just there are different framework. RAMO is based on the protocol measurement of general relativity, is considered everything inside embedded in the general relativistic framework. So, and the other model try to be stay close as much as possible to the classical astrometry. So the satellite is reconstructed by several approximations. And it's defined in the Parisian Celestial Reference System, Coordinate System. The basic difference between two approaches, you can see here, this is the coordinate, the direction, this is in the coordinate in the catalog. With the when use general relativity, we have to define a proper observer, proper geometry, and just you can see the difference. This you naturally introduce an aberration due to gravity to the local field, for example, at the sun and point, this is already 100 microseconds. Basically, the protocol measurements say that once you have an observer, you can always split the background geometry of the observer with the two operators that allow you to measure, to make some measurement in time and space. This is a basic principle that we use, of course, because curvature is everywhere. You have to define a measurement with respect to some observer, to some kinematical background, to some respect to some geometry. As far as Gaia is concerned, of course, we have here this this is a measurement, the angle with the direction of the light as projected on the local by cylindric observer. With respect to the attitude of the satellite, the attitude should be defined in general relativity, of course, to be consistent. And this is your measurement in the focal plane that you compare, is the data that you compare with the theoretical model here. Then, of course, this is you repeat this observation for each star, for each observation, to three observation directions. And very huge system of equation, observational equation, that you can solve. Once you solve, you have you solve for with respect to unknown, the astrometric parameter, the attitude parameter, instrumental, or global parameter. Then from here, you deduce the position and the motion, the motion of the stars. So it's a huge calculation. I don't want to enter the detail of this part. When you do repeat every also, of course, over them, in any direction, every time you create a symmetric sphere of reconstruction. Now, one of the global parameters here is you see is the gamma parameter, which in general relativity measure how unit mass curves space time. For general relativity is one, but for some scalar tensor theory, for example, for the predict the dilaton, there should be a difference from the one value predicted by GR at the level 10 to minus 6. So we start when we start with Gaia, we thought it was possible with Gaia with 2 billion of direction observed, it's a huge statistic, as a matter of fact, in the sky, to detect this value gamma to improve also this. But unfortunately, there is some problem in parallax zero shift Gaia, no? So don't we have to wait for next Gaia, or we need to improve, maybe with the DR5, we are able to improve this value. This determination gamma that at least will be as the Cassini, the value Cassini experiment that was about 10 to minus 5, determining deviation from the limit. Now let's move to local cosmology. And then we can see Gaia to as laboratory for the Lambda CDM panel. So this is total brightness map obtained by Gaia. So with Gaia, we are able to chart the six-dimensional phase space up to kiloparsec scales. That means since the precision of the classifications, Gaia is able to detect individual with such precision individual source, we are able to probe the Milky Way gravitational potential and search for signature cosmic evolution. For this reason, we move from relativistic astrometry, which is to implement model for data analysis, to gravitational astrometry, which means to interpret. So all these the effect of the gravity on photon and all the scale from the solar system to the Milky Way. Which, of course, comprises also to understand the formation scenarios, including stellar and planetary formations. For this reason, we call it this local cosmology because our Milky Way can be referenced and inflated as the sun, as much as the sun for the stellar evolution for astrophysics. And that can provide also constraint to some model parameters, especially in cosmological relations. I don't want to, everyone knows here, I think this audience, the Lambda CDM Paradigm. So these the absence of evidence of extra matter, the need of dark matter on this. In this case, in galaxy-galaxy cluster, large structure and megaparsec scale, cosmic hyperbaric ground, gravitational lensing, and rotation curve at galactic scale. Of course, there are many candidates, but one point is that, for example, in cosmological simulations, it's likely that Friedmann tells this how to curve and Newton tells mass how to move, in the sense that they use the solution of Einstein equation, the Friedmann Lemaître Robertson-Walker metric. But when you go at the scale of the growing structure in small scale, they use as a matter of Newtonian gravity, Newtonian. So it's not the framework generativity. In the recent years, there are many efforts to include this cosmological simulation of generativity in this G-evolution, for example, of the galaxies. Now, our galaxy. However, we know that our galaxy is made by different components. For the bulge, for the bar, and the spiral arms. We have the stellar halo and also the satellite galaxy. In the disk, we can find accreted unwavering star, or we can check in halo if there are accreted satellites with these stars. But the Milky Way is based fundamentally on the Lamb CDM hierarchical scenario, so it's a bottom-up process. So we expect to find in our galaxies many mergers due to the small the halo, so the sub-halo that formed that contributed to merger to form our galaxy. And this is the open question still today. So how many mergers in the history of the Milky Way, how large were there, where did the merger take place, or the merger affected the Milky Way? Thanks to Gaia, now we know, for example, that when we focus on the halo, we know, for example, that we observe this Gaia sausage. So a major, this was a perpendicular fall to the center of the galaxy. So we can see this from considering the stream, the classification of this object. We can see this for the external sausage galaxy, and that with respect in comparing the metallicity of the star with respect to the star that belongs to the Milky Way. But this was a huge fall that more massive than this Magellan cloud, small Magellan cloud. So it's not like the paradigm that we have many mergers, small mergers. We know also that our halo can be formed by tidal contribution. For example, we have observed that the recent passage of the Sagittarius dwarf galaxy enhanced the star formation, and we can see this. That is not, apparently, it's not even related to dark matter in this case, just gravity. Then we are able to count the substructure that we observe in Halo. This is the tumor diagram that shows this is the limit for the disc star. You can see the retrograde star of that one don't belong to our galaxy. Prograde stars are the stars that are the fall of the galactic rotation. So we have this is the Gaia Enceladus, but we are able to count many other substructure. But the main problem is that this cosmological simulation predicted many merger, many substructure. We as so far we didn't observe so many merger, so many substructures. So a few of these substructures. Maybe with the next data release, including without also with the new facilities on ground, no space, maybe we're able to detect more of this substructure. And of course, the detection of this substructure is very difficult, especially for example, in the case of Icarus, which is a merger that comes parallel to the galactic plane. So it's inside the galactic evolution. It's very difficult to determine its real origin of this, for example, this substructure. Then we know also that our galaxies is warped, but there is a warp. And then the warp is processing much more faster than predicted. So, and it was predicted by considering an atmospherical halo, the tidal contribution of Spiral, probably is a tidal contribution of other galaxies. Now, and then we have, of course, the rotation curve of galaxies that is that we need a halo in order to fit the flatness of the observed rotation curve. So now, since Gaia is observing a very is producing a relativistic kinematics, in order to check the first step of Lorentz cohomology to check if Milky Way can be, I'm saying why, in general relativistic can be described by general relativity is to use the rotation curve of the Milky Way for GR galaxy. Yes, because Gaia, in order to guarantee scientific products, this multi-length vision of our galaxy, we need to use general relativity. So any interpretation of Milky Way should be consistent with your theory underlying analysis process data. This is a fundamental step. We cannot neglect it. We cannot use general relativity in analysis of data and then Newton to reconstruct our Milky Way. Could be inconsistent. But usually in the weak field regime and the Milky Way scale is considered valid since one assumes that gravitational potential for relativistic effect are usually small, then negligible, and the Newton approximation of the general relativity is valid locally. But if you consider the same reason that we have made with the Gaia, when we have to consider and construct the light from inside the solar system, and we have to consider also the off-diagonal term of the metric because it's all the microsecond. If we suppose this is a possible Newtonian approximation of the solar system, of Einstein equation of the solar system, if you think there's some constant Newtonian approximation of the solution of the Einstein equation in the Milky Way, we can see that, for example, a b over c order when we put galactic velocity, this is the order of 10 to 100 microsecond. So it's larger than the individual astrometric error. So we should be very careful when we consider weak with respect to what. So and this was not possible before because we didn't have the accuracy of Gaia. So to make this a step for and okay, so we have to check if a weak relativistic effect could be relevant, and also to be aware that the small curvature limit in general relativity may not coincide with Newtonian regime. So in order to keep to understand what we introduce, if there is something new that we have to introduce, of course, we have to keep also the comparison of the general relativistic model with the classical one. This is the same that was done, I want just to mention this slide in the past. So when we were looking for Neptune was was considered dark planet in orbit of Uranus. Actually, it was found exactly where it was predicted by Vigneault theory. Following the success of detection on Neptune, when the astronomers tried to understand the excess of the periodic shift in Mercury, they hypothesized a volcano planet, a new planet, dark planet again. But actually, it was general activity, a small, very small effect that solved this problem. It was very small effect, but strong enough to change from Newton to general activity. And of course, there are new effects that general activity, like Stirling field, they have non-Newtonian counterpart. So this is just to say that we have to very carefully when we are interpreting to remove them. So these are maybe the small effect, weak field effect in the Milky Way cannot be neglected anymore or has to be considered in a different framework. As far as the galaxy is concerned, we know that the galaxy, usually the classical model, basically they consider the Poisson equation, and which is made by different component, density component for the bulge, for the thin field disk, and also for the halo, for example, Parabolic Frank-Wright halo. All these combined are plugged into the Poisson equation. Of course, they depend upon many parameters. We depend on the mass of the thin disk, the size of the bulge, and so on. From solving Poisson equation, we step to find the velocity, circular velocity of the star on the galactic ring. And then you derive the Milky Way classical velocity profile. Of course, if we keep the same baryonic component, you can have model the galaxy. Also, for example, the Mond model, which is a Mond considered a modification accelerate Newton acceleration via this interpolation function, which is a small regime, is getting these transitions between the Newton deep Mond regime through the acceleration scale G naught, with G naught is constrained by this radial acceleration relation and all the external galaxies. So there is a correction, small correction on the Newtonian acceleration, and you can derive also in this case the profile. You can change also the profile for the halo, for example, taking into account an Nernst density profile, which consider is constrained by cosmological simulation with this parameter related to the virial, such a definition of virial values, of course, depend on the density, characteristic density, and the scale density shape parameter, which are related to value found in the cosmological model. When we move to general activity, because it's the most difficult part, because we know very few exact solutions of general activity. So it's very difficult to solve Einstein equation. But if we think just at the metric disk and not the metric of the whole galaxies, for example, we can take the consideration line element solution of the Einstein equation, which is a broad solution describing as a symmetric stationary space-time. And for the disk, for example, we can consider just a dust in general activity, which means that stars are directing only gravity momentum. The disk is in equilibrium configuration as a pressureless rotating paper fluid. It's a simple model. And of course, this is valid because we know, of course, that star and Gunther are not effective over the one Parsec scale, and also the galaxy can be considered isolated around 25 kiloparsec. So it could be a good approximation to describe the dust GRE model, such metrics, the disk of galaxy in general activity. Now, here is the most hard part to understand, because here enter the protocol measurement in general activity, because it's different from Newton. In Newton, we don't need to define the observer. In general activity, we need to define the observer if we need to define the measurement. So any star, any circular motion in such a metric, you can represent with respect to a suitable coordinate system or suitable observer, which, for example, this one is a zero angular momentum observer, which means that are locally rotating observers moving on world line orthogonal to hypersurface is still well constant, the splitting of space-time. And they are used to, they have the definition equivalent. You can change from, this is for a static, for example, static observer, and this is for a zero angular momentum observer. You both of these equations. And you find this relationship between this component is the spatial azimuthal velocity with respect to this other component, the coordinate velocity. So basically, we are related. This is the coordinate angular velocity, which is used in Newtonian framework. Here, in general relativity, when you want to define a measurement with respect to the zero angular momentum observer, the observer which is not rotating, since I want to measure a rotation, I use the observer that in that location is not rotating, because I want to measure the rotation otherwise. And then this is you can see here that this the classical velocity is modulated by the geometrical factor. Here I have, this is a general definition. I haven't defined any specific solution of Einstein equation. I use just the symmetric stationary space time. Of course, I can split to consider just a component due to the kinematics, the component to the driving. This is the driving, which I will show in a while. And then, well, this foliation for astrometers is important, this space-time foliation, because this space-time foliation allows you to define, to make a comparison with different points of the space-time. It's a synchronization of space-time, because I am, the aim is to reconstruct the rotation curve of the Milky Way. When we, the of course, we needed to solve the metric, the function inside the metric. I need to define the function. And this is a very difficult task, find the exact solution. But if we put ourselves in the rigid rotating dust, so we just in an ideal environment that we our disk, this author, Balasing and Miller, found the solution for the line element. That this line element is this one. It's this metric function. And they find this solution, an analytical solution, but at the price of some. I mean, some constraint. For example, this solution is valid only in this physical region. It means that it's not valid very close to the axis of the Milky Way, the galactic center. And this the vertical is constrained by this for the vertical. It should be less of this averaging parameter. This solution, in fact, depends on three parameters: the bulge size, the extension of the Milky Way disk, and the velocity of the flat region. You can see that when you plug, so this you can find the solution by solving the Einstein equation for a dust, static dust. And you see just that you have, instead of one Poisson equation, like Poisson equation, you have here five equations. So with one equation, you can find the profile of the function, my metric function, and the another equation gives you the density, which is separated for the velocity. Then we have also in our approach, we have another parameter, the conformal factor, that there was another metric function in the line element. Because the other metric in the static dust solution, the other function was fixed at one. So I'm going to be touching a lot of time. But okay, now let's get back to our galaxy. So stationary asymmetric space-time may include curved solutions, such as solutions are quite general. But our galaxy object, the global solutions are realistic. We cannot expect to find a global solution for the entire galaxy by the Einstein equation. So we have, for example, the bulge region that are very complicated. Maybe we need hydrodynamical simulation to take on this part of the galaxy. And know that Gaia, for example, has discovered triple stellar black hole. One is very close in the disk, 500 parsecs to us. So it's not only the black hole in the center of the Milky Way, but there are also black holes in the disk of the galaxy. Then we have spiral arms, we have the warp, we have the spin interaction, we have the flaring effect, and then we have the disk. So it's a multi-composite object. So we have to find a way to match different Einstein solutions, which describe each part of the galaxy. Of course, it's a very complicated step. But let's focus on the disk. We see that we can define the spatial, the absolute spatial velocity we can measure it by the zero angular momentum observed with this formula. If the Euclidean velocity is negligible, as the post-Newtonian approximation I showed you before emphasizes, if we beta is negligible, we see that the spatial velocity measured by the sum as p is proportional to the off-diagonal term of this metric and function. So which proportional to that, and then this means that this is some gravitational grounding, this work and the disk scale. Of course, this off-diagonal is very different for the off-diagonal term that we used in the definition in the Barycelona-Celestial reference system inside the solar system. So now this is an answer. So should be this gravitational grounding an effect of dark matter that we say that can explain the flattened tightness rotation curve. Then I will come back to this later. Then to prove these answers, okay, we selected among the 2 billion sources observed by Gaia, the most accurate and precise to know that we have the most homogeneous accurate sample to trace the angular momentum of the Milky Way. And we started, this is the these were the strict requirement to have complete Gaia's automated data set. This is a parameter that we don't select single sources, the parallax go to 20%, and so in order to assure a proper 6D reconstruction of this location occupied by each individual star. And derived by the same observed, it's a fundamental requirement generativity. And of course, then we transform this in the galactocentric coordinate of the solar system. So we had 6,000 objects in the Gaia, and then we moved for Gaia 3. We enhanced the sample almost 1 million sources. And this is the distribution of the sources. The sample, for example, this galactic center, this distribution of the star used for the Cefeid photometric, because they gave photometric distance, they want to see, to look a little bit far. And also we try to circular low eccentricity star in order to be consistent with the circular velocity that we want to measure to fit, and also to mine, we try to put this constraint to my mind is a Hall entanglement. Okay, this was the result with the DR2, but just to want to show you this one, the difference with the DR3. I'm more concentrated on the result with the Gaia data registry. So this is in black dot star, you can see the median azimuthal velocity at the median distance from the galactic center. In blue, you have the velocity profile for the classical model. In orange, the velocity profile with the ANASTO profile. In red, the profile with the relativistic model. And in green, the velocity profile with the model. You can see that all the data points, all the models fit. Statistically equivalent with the data. So this is also the result for each sample. Of course, they are very consistent with each other, the result of the best fit estimate of the median, so the posterior and the sigma, sigma credible intervals are very consistent. Just for the mass of the bulge, the significant these are slightly smaller than the lambda CDM paradigm compared to the model, the Milky Way classical model. For the BGB model, we see we get again physical result for key parameter for the size of the bulge and the outer part and the velocity regime. And also, we get consistent posterior with the and a stove, the three parameters in a stove profile. Then we move to consider also the density profile in the range of data that we used. All the density profile for the model are consistent, there are no divergences. Of course, just for the dark sector, we have divergence for the halo, density of the halo, but also the total, the Baryonic total mass of the Milky Way, the Lambda CDM and the Milky Way are considered. So we say that for as far as the relativistic model, since the relativistic model picks the velocity profile, the relativistic model does not have the halo content. But of course, the four parameters that we have is this one we fit because we in the likelihood analysis of this parameter, because we couldn't we have just one point because it's at the sun, we measure the density at the sun, we don't have many points to constrain much more this parameter. But of course, with the comma, in such case, we can define also the mass relativistic context, and actually, we find that these the solution of the mass of the derived by the comma with respect to the baryonic mass classical model are almost consistent, and there is no deviation. Then we see that the density profile of the four models are consistent, are consistent, and also for the halo, the density of the halo is consistent with the expected. And the total Baryonic mass predicted by the Lambda CDM model analysis is slightly smaller than the value expected for the I said before, because it depends on the Lambda CDM model. In fact, it's much more constrained by cosmological consideration. So we see that the value are not the much larger than we proposed recently in the real mass produced in the Lambda CDM model. Now, how to understand to compare the effect the flatness produce the flatness with respect to the halo effect on Newton, since this gravitation is not Newton counterpart. So we adopted this method in order to disentangle the dragging effect from the velocity profile or the velocity profile. We just use we consider we plug in the Poisson equation the general relativistic density profile in order to get Newtonian effective Newtonian potential related to the density derived from the Einstein equation, and we subtracted this velocity that should be related just to baryonic mass to total profile relativistic velocity profile. Of course, we also find which vertical 8 we can keep this comparison, of course, because the Balanchine model is strictly valid along the disk, not every zeta. So in this case, we are able to determine the amount of rotational velocity across the Milky Way plane with the gravitational driving. And you can see this is the gravitational driving in the general relativistic model. And you see that this come up is completely substitute the halo effect is at 10 or 15 kiloparsecs. It is already at 50 at the 30-36% of the velocity profile. So this is this says that also the model is overlapping the halo profile. So all these three results, so the velocity profile, the density profile, and the dark effect, the substitute, all the three aspects that point firmly to the idea that there is some gravitational drag produced the effect of general relativity that sustains the flatness, the quasi-flatness of the rotation curve, not just one, and it is compared to the other solution. Now, as I said, data are independent from theoretical models that are used for the prediction, and that is exactly what they constitute in test ground. The general relativistic model should be considered a toy model, maybe for this, but all the four parameters, it is 10 or 13, 14 parameters of the other model. So dark matter does not absorb emit light, but the certain responding to the gravity force. It then just the calculation of an extra mass halo required to justify the vector galactic rotation curves. Mond require an adjustment in the low acceleration regime. I asked about the CDM result require much more mass for this event switching on the cosmological simulation. So general activity could imply the gravitational dragging, that Mach-like effect, drive the galaxy below rotation function, the geometry unseen but perceived as manifestation of gravity, according to Einstein equation, is responsible for flatness at large scale. Here we are considering the exact solution of Einstein equation at large scale, not small scale. So it's likely that we have tested all space that's mass out to move. By setting which is the of course, we have to make a selection. We would like to pursue general activity because general activity is standard theory of gravity. So, and of course, they separate Einstein equation allow you to separate density and velocity. We can analyze the potential modification extends of generativity in the background, because against the background of generativity, non-Newtonian theory. We can establish what extent we can consider if we can treat with generativity way or not, and where it's not possible, why we shouldn't necessitate a Newton gravity. And then we need to identify further mathematical solution of the equation. So the relative scale between wave dynamics can be dominated by, for example, waves, whale or length spectrum space-time, and Newton approximation is valid only locally, as opposed to Newtonian, for example, in the solar system. We extend also more of this our galaxy proved by the explicit accurate Gaia data. Can be considered template for other galaxies. Now we are moving to check this paradigm also in external galaxies, and for example, this velocity profile for we need a little bit framework to understand better how to define the density because it's another kind of measurement for external galaxies. With Gaia, we have a direct measure, but external galaxies, the brightness is some surface brightness, something different. But of course, the velocity profile agree with, for example, with this point model generality. So next development will be able to finish. So we have of course we have to prove this although it's very effective due to prove this model. For example, we have to establish matching condition for different parts of the metric of the galaxies, which is the empty space asymptotic match condition of the, for example, this solution in empty space. We need to introduce a dynamical simulation, for example, Einstein laws of system or some part where pressure we have to consider now pressure fluid, something like this. And then there was also we adopt Bloom's procedure in general activity that means, for example, to merge some solution of Einstein equation. Quite recently, there are very interesting results from the mathematical point of view, for example, which is a singularity in one solution could be an angular momentum in another part of the space-time. So this gluing procedure is very important now for this kind of research. And then to set the limits, we can use this our galaxy as template also for other galaxies. Then there is also another upside in approach that we are taking, the fact that all cosmological simulation should collapse what we observe today in our galaxy. So that what we have found, for example, the observed rotation curve and so on, can be the constraint for this cosmological simulation at its acceleration. So this is our conclusion. Of course, the best of guidance seem to come with the far. We are going to improve to a large, and now we stop. And I think that I missed to say that we keep a range of data at 4.5 kilopascal because we don't want to go close to the bulge because anymore asymmetric stationary assumption is not anymore valid. And then we stop at 19 kilopascal because we have the distance accurate to 20%. With the R4, the R5, we are able to extend much more and to see. Improve is the Plekhanov of this flatness rotation curve our range. So we have learned a lot. For sure, to have impact to the paradigm, the fact that we were obliged to use general relativity changed completely the paradigm of we have to move to relativistic astronomy and produce, for example, in this case, as I showed you before, a distinct quantity difference between a Newtonian approach and a relativistic approach inside of galaxy. So when we use relativistic astronomy, for example, it reminds me that with the Hether, what was removed by introducing a new kinematics. not looking for molecular forces learned for, but the new kinematics, no new dynamics. And of course, also from understanding the physics inside, the entire physics inside the Milky Way, maybe help also to understand better of the, for example, the problem dark energy, because we need to understand the scalar distance and systematics related to this important one. So thank you very much for your attention. Sorry, it's long.
Thank you very much. Questions? As from whom? Please.
Yes. So, do we know just how much missing matter there is there? You didn't come up with a number.
We just made this one.
Well, we know that there's 25% of the universe is missing dark matter, right? Can you measure what is in the Milky Way?
Yes, we measured
How much was it?
this. There was agreement with the. You mean this?
Yes.
There was an agreement what we expected for the when we consider the halo dark matter. This is an agreement what we ever measured.
Yes, that's the 10%.
Yes. So the but of course the difference when you use general relativity, the model general relativity does not need halo. We don't have halo. So but and the number by the baryonic matter is consistent with the lead extra mass. The
And
velocity profile for the gravitational grounding also.
so the other question is the baryonic matter homogeneous in halo?
But there is no baryonic matter in halo with you, but it's much more on the disk.
Okay, so the question then is, so most of the baryonic matter is in the disk.
Yeah, there are some streams that are but.
Very little in the halo. So the question then would be, how do you work out work hydrodynamic theory into this model?
Oh, okay. We have to implement, of course, hydrodynamic material in this model. We don't have the model for the stream in the halo, if you mean this, of course.
Yes.
But this is just we focus on the rotation curve of the dark
Right.
galaxies. This is the term where we suppose the halo should take into account the flatness. So the number according to the mass, the baryonic mass, the density are all in agreement which in the model. So we cannot exclude one model and the other. Of course, it's probably favorite general relativity because it does correct the baryonic matter, but it doesn't need the halo and halo. So you, of course, there will be some now. For example, all the structure inside the halo can be determined by gravity, by interaction of gravity, not necessarily for the halo
Okay.
as the work shows. So
Yes.
we don't need the halo for the work, for example, the precession of the work.
Okay. Aparthi.
Yeah.
At some point, you started talking about the gravitational drag in the disk, and maybe I didn't catch it. I didn't exactly understand how the baryonic matter created the gravitational drag disk.
No, it's not dependent. It's just a geometrical effect, a curvature effect. There is no baryonic matter responsible for the dragging effect. It's just a curvature effect. So you have the last equation that tell you of the source of the master the space of the curve and space time the mass of the move. This is the second part of gravitational. Of course, you need the source. Probably we need to understand the origin of this gravitational drag. It's related for sure to the solution of Einstein equation, one of solution Einstein equation. But probably is the heritage of the curvature, is a background geometry that we inherit from the galaxy evolution. When galaxy formed, there was some geometry, and this is the equilibrium geometry, let me say, the drag, the star, the rotation drag, the stars. So it's a purely geometrical effect, not dependent on baryonic. So, of course, you need to stay. We don't do this, explain the flatness of rotation curve, but without any, we don't, you don't need extra mass. Just the baryonic mass, you have the stars of Gaia. This 1 million stars of Gaia, say the baryonic mass is okay for this model.
And so this curvature effect would then not show up in Newtonian calculations because there is no curvature.
That does not exist in Newtonian, this kind of effect. So you have gravitomagnetism, which is produced by current mass, okay? But it's not gravitomagnetism. So As NASAs, I prefer to say actually gravitational dragging because we then need to understand the origin. So it could be some geometrical evolution of the whole galaxies that and the stars find themselves in its geometry that was due to the formation of galaxies, the formation of galaxies, but is not related to the current mass. It's not the star, the moon velocity of the star that produces such an effect. This is a small effect, as in the solar system. It's a large effect.
So this is kind of like the lens tearing effect.
Little bit, but lens tearing, yes, but a larger scale. We have to calibrate it a different scale. So that's and then that there is also I've been going into detail, of course, because we have three different let me say asymptotic observer for the BCRS. You have static, which depends on local gravitational field. You have another observer that depends on the geometry of the gravitational field of the disk. So you are expected that these two both asymptotically match with the empty space time with the quasi inertial reference system. So it's likely that we are checking that there are differences with the geometry because we are immersed in the disk of galaxy, but our solar system, all the astronomical measurements are then compared to the quasar. But in the beginning, the quasar and our solar system is the geometry of the galaxies. And so this is dragging effect can be the evolution of galaxies, the mismatch between different inertial settings.
How do you understand the systematics on this, then, if it comes out of the solution of the Einstein equations? Do you need a suite of different solutions, or is there actually some way of kind of heuristically working out what the... What
you mean the systematic in this test?
On the modeling, yeah.
No, it is, for the modeling, in the basic here, you don't have, we use the Gaia data are very accurate here. So we use robust estimate of so we use the in this case we just fit the data the formula, but we use a robust scatter estimate because the Gaia data are so accurate.
No, I'm sure. I'm sure the experimental answer is not done.
But you mean systematic in the Gaia data analysis?
No, I mean in the you have some model that comes from the geo model, and the uncertainties on that are hard to explore. I imagine if it's you have to assume some solution to the Einstein equations.
Yeah, this is a solution.
So it's a single point.
No, okay.
You feed the data in.
These solutions. This is an exact solution of Einstein equation, exact solution in some particular conditions that you fix one metric function. In these cases, it's called the static gas solution, and then you solve the Einstein equation, five equation. And that's it, you find that this solution by this is by modified Bessel function, spectral function, you fix the constraint, the constant in order to have the physical. It's a physical Taylor solution for the disk. It's not, so you cannot extend it to the axis or zeta. But it's, as a toy model, let me say, it's very rare to find the exact solution that fits so well the data. So this is a few parameters. So it depends. So we choose this solution because it has parameter, the solution that you can test. So I don't know if I catch correctly your question. So in this case, we are not checking systematically the model. We are just comparing this toy model with the classical, the widely used model and domain. So, and that they are quite equivalent, statistically equivalent. Yeah, sorry.
How low does the data go? I mean, your curves diverge a bit at the low end. I mean, how far in the...
You
far?
Mean...
No. You go back to the slide you were on a minute ago with where the frame dragging kicks in.
You see it here. Okay, but this is not reliable because I'm not understanding this part.
No, not this one. Sorry, the
dragging
curves.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering how low in distance do the data come? Can you get
the accurate data? I said we have go up to 19 kiloparsec. Okay, because we had at that distance we have the parallel saturation 20%.
Yeah,
so very accurate. But of course, here this is not reliable because we are not corresponding to any data.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. How low is the data?
We can go clever. Another slide in the part of them. This one. For example, we compared this work with this Kleperian, some they use the Gaia DR2 data and some authors, and they found that this is a Kleperian off of the Milky Way rotation curve. But they use a bootstrap technique. So we and then mix all the measurement of parallaxes and distance.
Sure.
So it's different from us because we see this a slight decline around the 18 kiloparsecs, but it's still a crazy flatness, it's still sustained by the flatness. So we were going to improve, but we want to skip with the R2, we're going to do the R4. With the R4, we are going to really check if this is a slight decline, so you confirm the decline.
And there's a lot of discussion about the Jovian thing of bombs when you get up there. I was wondering more at the other end when you go down to 5-6, just the GR model looks like it ripped up rather than
it goes down.
Okay.
You can see this is this it goes down the extrapolation, but of course we have this is the psychological simulation and for example, here, you can see here, it's going down, the red part, more than the circulation of the classical one. Here also, it's going rapidly down. So we're expecting that it's going down. So also an analytical mathematical consideration, asymptotic, it's going asymptotic and flatness, it's not going to increase the. So, but we will see with the next data. Is confirmed or not.
Do we have any questions from Zoom? If there is, please just unmute and fire up. Any other questions from Zoom? If I can ask, maybe,
yeah.
So for the BG model, I mean, it does have limitations in terms of if you try to explain the hello part, the galactic hello part, and so on. But for disk, explaining the disk kinematics and so on. Are there any limitations which you think are there?
But we cannot use a BG model for Zeta for sure.
Yes.
But of course, our galaxies, the thick disk is not one kiloparsec height. So if you see our data, in our data, the analysis here, you can see that, for example, we do see all the sources that we select are very skip on the found in the disk. We can have not 0.203 kiloparsec in it. So, of course, this model is valid just on the disk far away from the region. But I suspect, since it responded so effectively with the data, I suspect there should be some limit or some much more general solution to find. Maybe through the gluing process, we're able to find this solution. I mean, it's to complicate a little bit by adding the pressure experiment. But of course, but it's surprising. It was just we selected this solution because I said as a clear parameter fit. But it was just a surprise to see that fit so well with the respect, especially in comparison to the model that widely is a digital trip. So the very well known comparable. I hope that it answers your question.
Thank you.
So I was wondering, can we apply, what is the scope of applying the GR model to other galaxies? Because I guess Gaia gives a lot of data in the galaxy, but...
Yeah, because with Gaia, you have the detail that you cannot have by some of the other galaxies. You can see 2 billion objects are very classical. Each individual point is a trace of gravitational potential. So you know everything about this object. In the other external galaxy, you don't have this. Now we are trying to do it in Andromeda galaxy, for example, but you never knew the tail. So it's like just you use the sun to calibrate the physical, so physical stellar evolution of the sun, everything related to the mass, the energy of the sun. The same should be with our galaxies. Since we can go deeper into the galaxy with such details, then we can, of course, start to see the galaxy as a physical template for other spiral, seeing as spiral galaxies, of course, not for galaxies. But here, if this is this scenario is confirmed, means that we have to find a suitable geometry for the cluster of galaxies, for the Lenz cylinder. So if I use just a spherical method solution, I could have found the Lagrangian effect. So we just changed to consider the proper conditionalizing case, which always, of course. And it's a huge work, of course. It's not easy task.
Okay, thank you. Let's thank our speaker again. Please join.